Talk Shoes. Recorded live.
Welcome to the Customer Experience Optimization Online Talk Show. I'm Lynn Hunsaker, your host. And today we have a conversation about successful Voice of the Customer programs. It's Ingrid Lindberg here representing the business-to-consumer viewpoint and myself representing the business-to-business viewpoint of customer experience management. For those of you who may not know, which is probably in the minority of our audience, Ingrid has a long history of working in the healthcare field and being a chief customer officer. I have a long history of working in business-to-business manufacturing organizations, leading customer experience transformation. So we have been presenting a different topic every month for some months now. So if you're new to this series, please check out our homepage for this online talk show at tinyurl.com/CEM-show. So CEM-show. By the way, you can find more information about Ingrid at chiefcustomer.com and about myself, Lynn Hunsaker, at clearactioncx.com. So let's go ahead and get started. We have our standard questions, and I'm going to just say what they are before we get going, because sometimes we just get on a roll, and I like to keep that as is. So the questions we will be discussing today are, what is Voice of the Customer successfully and what is it not? How do you establish it, and then how do you keep it rolling? So, Ingrid, I usually like to let you take the first stab at it. What is successful Voice of the Customer, and what is it not, if you have that in a nutshell?
Oh, definitely not in a nutshell, Lynn, right?
That's a pretty tall order, I know.
A pretty tall order. It's funny. I was actually talking with a client of mine last week, and we were having a little bit of a conversation about Voice of the Customer. And I told her, I was like, you're going to, you know, if you have a chance, you should call in and listen. And she said, well, do you have all the answers? And I said, goodness, no, we don't have all the answers. I think that between Lynn and I, we've just tried a bunch of things and figured out what works better than others. So that's at least my perspective on it. So, you know, I think that's a tough question, right? What's a successful Voice of the Customer program, right? And when I think about VOC, Voice of Customer, I really think about a structure that you create inside an organization that is capturing all of the different places where you're getting feedback from your customer, regardless of that customer type. That function is primarily responsible for gathering, analyzing, looking for patterns, looking for learnings, figuring out what the next question should be, and then pushing that information out to the organization. So if I think about it at the highest level, what does a successful one look like? It's a place that really can keep their finger on the pulse of how people are feeling about your company and can help be that true early warning system if things are starting to go a little bit astray. So I'll just stop there. We'll start with the successful and the good. What's your spin? 10,000
well,
foot levels.
I think we ought to give you a lot of credit for that. That was a pretty good nutshell.
Hilarious.
Well, Voice of the Customer is really about the customer. It should be about the customer's world and getting in tune with the realities that customers face. And I love that you mentioned it's capturing whatever exists about what customers are saying, and making a lot of sense about it, finding the stories and the patterns that inform management to do things differently, to be in sync with customers. So that, I think, is the real crux of the matter. It has the two components. It's not only the collection and making sense of it, but helping management to do things in sync with customers. So we talk a lot about customer focus, being customer centric, and I think that Voice of the Customer is the source of going on that path. You really can't do it unless you have a Voice of the Customer.
For sure, for sure. And I think one of the things that I have learned, and, you know, once again, it's I've learned through playing the game of whack-a-mole, right? So I've popped my head up with ideas and gotten beaten down, and it hasn't worked. And sometimes you stick your head up, and you're like, oh, this does work. Yay, so let's celebrate that. So one of the things that I have so learned when it comes to a really strong VOC program in a company is all about that centralization, right? And I've done it some ways or sometimes literally through making people move into a function and truly creating like an org design that's based around voice of customer. Other companies who haven't been as excited about that, I've done things like putting together voice of customer councils, so at least you have all the players pulled together on a regular enough basis that you get information that's appropriate and you're getting it in a timely manner. So, you know, I kind of am one of those people who I'm not necessarily sure if I care about how you get to that place where your program truly is about being the voice of the customer to your company as long as you can get there, right? And I think we'll have to spend some time on the how do you not do it, how does it not look successful? I have a ton of war stories from there. But I think that as long as you can get the right people in the right room, it doesn't necessarily have to be done via organizational design, right? I mean, there are ways you could do it. They're a little softer and gentler. Have you, which is your preference?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you like the org or the not?
Well, I do like centralization. I think there's a lot of wisdom to centralizing voice of the customer because ideally customers don't have to repeat themselves. And so there's a single view regardless of where you're at in the company or what time you're accessing data. You have a single view of what the customer's realities are. Also a 360-degree view of what the customer's realities are. So that would entail the customer journey or a series of a portfolio of voice to the customer. Listening posts is another thing, another way that people phrase it. Across the different touch points or customer lifecycle phases that the customer is in. So there are a number of ways to do that, and it doesn't necessarily require that you have every single methodology in your portfolio. I recommend actually, and I'm seeing more movement in this way toward capturing unstructured data or capturing whatever customers are saying, say on the 800 number line, on to your people and informal interactions, capturing that and making some structure out of it so that it's actionable by your managers. So I think that as much as we love the traditional market research formality that voice of the customer often has, that's not always absolutely necessary. In fact, it should be augmented certainly with other things that customers are already telling you about.
Unquestionably the truth on that one, Lynn. I find that so many kind of, you know, early entree voice of customer programs are spun out of market research functions or are just a market research function that's been renamed. You know, and when I think about true VOC, it's quant and qual. And so often, all you see is that quant, right? Everybody wants a number mm-hmm. that's going to bring proof to you. And I think that's why people err on the side of heading to just paying attention to it, right? So everybody wants to have a number. And, you know, CEOs ask for numbers and CFOs ask for numbers. We've had those conversations before, right? But I think the value in a real VOC program is really in finding the nuggets in the unstructured, A, and B, having verbatims that you can share. And it's, you know, I find one of the biggest mistakes that people make, especially when they start walking into unstructured, is they always just yank the worst verbatim they possibly can. And then they bring that into a meeting and they throw it out on the table like it's this great weapon, right? Here's my grenade. Here's the verbatim from one of our customers telling us about how horrible we are, whatever it may be. And I think that that is almost as destructive as only using the data-based research, right? So there's this really kind of sweet spot in the middle of those two places where you have to find the mean in all of your verbatims, just like you've got to find the mean in your numbers. Have you seen it used as a weapon before?
Oh, sure. And, you know, I think that the more I see different presentations on Voice of the Customer, I'm realizing that we've gotten locked into this statistical process control chart. I don't know if people are very familiar with SPC charts, but if you've ever taken some kind of Six Sigma, Lean Six Sigma training or quality training, the way that you want to make sure that your manufacturing machines are in sync with the specifications is that you track whether they are within an upper limit bound or a lower limit bound. And as long as they don't go out of bounds, then you know that your manufacturing machinery is doing well. So I find that the way that we're showing Voice of the Customer, especially on dashboards, is so much similar to that. And it's basically check the box so that I can go about business as usual. And I find it to be pretty much a shame that we're locked into that, because what I would prefer to see is that we're painting a picture of who's that other 18% of the customers that aren't happy, or, you know, how do we characterize the size of the group that is or isn't pleased with something, and what's the story there, rather than looking at some kind of sterile chart that gives us an excuse to not transform the way we're doing things. So I guess what it boils down to me more than anything is, are we really in sync with what customers need? And if we're not, then what's the money that's being left on the table? What's the opportunity that we're bypassing? And I think that Voice of the Customer owes it to the organization to uncover that information.
Well, and, you know, goodness gracious, right? There's such an argument that I find, and I'm fascinated as to whether or not you've seen this one too on the B2B side, but I kind of giggle a little bit sometimes, right? Because I've sat through so many conversations where people are, you know, very vehement about, well, customers don't necessarily know how our product works, so how would they know what it is that they need from us? Or do we really just want to build things that our customers are asking for? If anybody else throws that Henry Ford quote at me, I really might mm-hmm. throw up. And what I try to steer people back to is that it's just like any other piece of information in your decision-making process. It's not the only one that matters. Right? It's not the only one that matters. But if you're not paying attention to what your customers are saying about you, what they're asking of from you, and how they're thinking about their interactions with you, if you're not paying attention to any of that, you're probably really far off the mark. Now, on the flip side, if you're only paying attention to that, you may be straying too far away from your brand, from your core service offerings. I mean, there's a thousand things that you could do if you go, once again, to either side of that equation, right, to the far ends of either side of that equation. So it's an important tool, but it's not the only tool. And I think that's something that a lot of these organizations need to remember, is that it's not the only voice that you need to be listening to. Does that make sense, Lynn?
Oh, absolutely. The trifecta of customer inputs, employee inputs, and operational inputs, I think, is really where you find the real story of things. And until you get to the point where you can integrate your various sources of voice of the customer, as well as employee survey inputs and operational data, then you're not really seeing the full potential of what Voice of the Customer can bring to you. Now, I think that we rarely get to that point because we're, as practitioners in this area, constantly bogged down with all of the rollout of the data collection and the reporting of the data. It's it can take on a life of its own. So
I'm thinking for a second, Lynn, right? Like how many people, somebody not that long ago asked me if I could give any advice on starting a VOC program. And my answer was, you don't have to do everything day one, right? And you're so right. People get so bogged down in these huge system implementations. And it's like, guys, if you just like bring people into a room and talk about what everybody knows, in from all of their different survey mechanisms and all the work that they do talking to customers, you can actually start a VOC program just like that.
Well, what I found is that we so often struggle with response rates. You know, there were only 5% of people out of 100 that that responded to the survey. And over time, I've come to realize that actually when you make a questionnaire or an interview about the other person, they will talk about themselves readily. In fact, they'll usually be completely oblivious to time. Whereas if you're asking them to talk about you, well, that's, you know, that's a little bit of a stretch. And anybody who's been a supervisor, if you've had to give a performance review of someone, that's uncomfortable, and it's always hard, even if you're, you know, working day in and day out with a team, and then you have to evaluate their performance. And I think that that's the quandary that Voice of the Customer has become. We're always asking them to evaluate us, to give us input on our products and our performance, whereas if we actually shifted Voice of the Customer to be about the customer and then made the translations internally to how that applies to the various functional areas within the company, we could get a heck of a lot more data and a lot more value at a lot less cost.
Anybody who wants
to talk to me about those ideas, I'd be happy to share more individually.
Well, and let's throw on just a little bit more humor on this one, right? I wrote a blog post, gosh, probably it was last year sometime. I'm going to totally retweet it right now because it's so funny. And I think I called it, "Oh my God, it's time to stop the survey madness." So,
mm-hmm.
right, so there are definitely ways that you could approach a B2C conversation when you're trying to gather voice of customer information that will create a relationship that enables people to be more willing to talk to you, right? I think you, from the B2B perspective, having done a little tiny bit just with clients that brought us customers in some prior lives, you're so right. You know, in that B2B world, people don't necessarily want to talk about the relationship they have because it's much more one-to-one, right? That gets hard. So there's, you know, it's awesome that you figured out ways to get around that. On the B2C side, it seems that everybody has an opinion, everybody wants to share their opinion, and now every single company in the world is asking for your opinion. And there's this moment where I actually really would love to ask all my B2C friends out there, you know, could you just stop and think for a second about what are you asking people and why are you asking that question? And so many VOC programs these days in the B2C space seem to be around, oh, are you satisfied? Was it easy? Are you going to recommend us? And frankly, there's a lot of interactions that don't need that question, right? So it's one extreme
mm-hmm.
or the other, isn't it?
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so what bad things have you seen? I totally just, you know, gave away a little bit of a one, but we had talking about things that don't work, too. So what things have you seen that don't?
Well, a lot of times it's obvious that the survey is designed to reward people for their bonuses. And you can tell that because the sections of the survey are specific to different departments. And so as much as it kind of follows your customer journey, it's actually more about how those managers perform so that, you know, we know that they can get their money. So, again, it boils down to what I mentioned at the very beginning, that unless you're actually trying to be in sync with what customers' realities are, you're missing at least half the value of what voice of the customer is supposed to be. And, in fact, I think that, ironically, voice of the customer can be opposite of what you're trying to do. You're trying to improve the customer experience. The whole practice of doing a voice of the customer feedback, if you're a customer, can be a horrible experience sometimes, as much as, you know, it's intended to be the opposite. So I find that a bit humorous.
Okay, can I tell one of my favorite stories about this? Am I allowed? You know my stories,
yeah.
Lynn, right? It's always about story time for me.
Yep.
So I was taking a survey for one of those companies that without fail always hits like number one or number two spots in, you know, the Temkin experience ratings and the Forrester customer experience ratings. So this is one of our beloved companies that we're all trying to emulate. And I've been a client of theirs, a customer of theirs, since I was a wee little child. And so I have a lot of loyalty to this company, and I really love this company and all of those things. Now, I had an experience with this company that really just didn't meet my expectations, and it was a pretty bad experience. And, of course, as soon as I got done with that phone call, I was, you know, routed into a post-phone call transactional survey. Now, not only was it a transactional survey, it was also a relational survey. So they were trying to do what you had, you know, mentioned earlier before, which is partially ask me questions about how I felt about my interaction with the person and partially ask me questions about how I felt with about my interactions with the company. And so, you know, the person had not served me very well, had fallen back on process and procedure as the reason that they couldn't help me. And so my feelings towards the company were pretty significantly affected as well. And so the survey starts, and it's like a 10 or 11 question survey, which number one is way too long. I always recommend no more than 3 questions on a post-transaction survey, because people aren't going to fill out 50 answers for you if they've just done a simple transaction. They're just not going to do it. So way too many questions, first of all. And the very first question was, how did you feel about this rep? On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 is really bad, 10 is really wonderful, and I typed 1. And then this little voice came on and said, well, Ingrid, just as a reminder, 1 means that it was a really bad experience, and 10 means it was a really good experience. Like, okay, I got it. Next question, question number 2 comes out, you know, would you be willing to recommend? I pushed 1 again, right? This is a really bad experience. I kid you not. 10 question survey, 9 times that little voice came on to remind me that a 1 meant it was really bad and a 10 meant it was really good. And all I could think of was, wow, not only have you taken this horrible experience that I had, you've now made it worse because you're clearly thinking that I'm not smart enough to figure out by the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th time that 1 is really bad. So it's a great example of going way too far in trying to protect your results. And I see that mm-hmm. when I deal with car companies. I'm seeing it with more and more post-transactional surveys. Are you sure you really want to rate us a 1, Lynn?
Well, I did love buying my car. I'll tell you that. It was a fabulous day, except at the very end when the guy said, now you'll be getting a call and you know, my end of the year bonus really depends on it, getting, you know, presents for my kids and everything. And so I hope you'll give us the 10. And so every time I'm thinking about buying my car, actually I'm thinking about that. And I hate that so much because I think that, just like you're talking about, it means that they don't really trust my opinion. Right? Because they're not allowing me to have my opinion. And I think that's really at odds with our society right now, where we have so many opportunities for people to go on TripAdvisor or America, what do they call the Idol, American Idol or whatever they are, where you can vote on things, right? I mean, so people
right.
are used to being able to voice their opinions and to have that respected. One of my favorite stories about Voice the Customer was when I was going in a small cafe to get a drink, and I thought, well, I'll get that brownie as well, and the price was marked. And then when I told the guy, he says, oh, no, that price is that's on the wrong label. And I said, well, I don't want that anyway. And he says, well, I already rang it up. And so at the end of the thing, he says, oh, and you're a lucky person. You got randomly selected to answer our survey. And so he marks down a 10 on the receipt and says, please make sure you give this rating. And so when I actually went back and did the survey, none of the questions were about any of my experience. They were all about you know, the loyalty program and how I might help them evangelize their brand, things like that. So that was kind of the most interesting VOC that I had. I've chuckled about it many times, but these are kind of bittersweet chuckles, aren't they?
They are, but you hope that, you know, I always hope when I tell these stories on stage, when I'm giving one of my talks, I always hope that there's someone in the audience who can sit there for 1 second and internalize the fact that they're doing the same thing and that they can perhaps go back and fix it before it continues and causes yet another customer to have to experience what we've experienced. That's how I think about it, Lynn, right? It's
absolutely.
Hopefully
that's
one person.
Point.
Just fun.
Yes. So, yeah, making a dent in the world a little at a time. How would you recommend people start a Voice of the Customer program to be successful? Do you have any definitive viewpoint on that?
You know, I do. I think that, number one, you really do just have to figure out where all the data bits are first. And the reason that I say that is so often I think that some new executive will get hired into an organization and say, oh my gosh, you don't have a VOC program. Go and hire blank company to come in and bring in their platform. And, you know, or whatever it may be. And so often companies are gathering an enormous amount of information, even today, right? Even in the beginning of their program, but they just haven't looked at it all together yet. And so what I tell people is when you're actually starting this, just the most simple way to start is you really do just need to, number one, identify where all of your data is coming from. And it's all throughout the organization. Trust me on that right now. Number two, get everyone into a room who's actually accountable or responsible for collecting that data. Number three, sit down and figure out where you're over-surveying and what you're under-surveying. So because there are places that you will very quickly identify that you're asking the same people the same question multiple times. So figure out together how you can actually start to do the work together, right? How you can start to do the work together. So it's a simple approach to at least get people in the room, understand what you have and understand what you're missing. And that's where you can start to find out, you know, where your wins are, what are you actually missing, long before you actually have to ask for, you know, lots of money to actually set up a listening platform. It's just one of those moments where stop and look at what you already have. If you keep it pretty simple, you can start to find some pretty easy wins early on that later will buy you some social capital to do the investment to get the platform.
Exactly. I think that that could help people a lot by following that recipe. In fact, from the benchmarking study that we did for several years with B2B companies, we found that those who were bringing people together, who were managing something, anything about customer experience and at least having some kind of intranet or quarterly call or something like that for them to coordinate and connect the dots among themselves, they were seeing bigger business results. Well, my primary recommendation for starting a Voice of the Customer program is to figure out who needs to act on customer experience and in what way. And ultimately, I believe that every functional area needs to act on customer experience inputs. And unless you have actually thought through that and figured out, you know, what kind of cadence things change in your company and what kind of cadence things change for your customers to identify how you might have some cross-functional workshops and things so that you can work through whatever hairy issues are going to arise from the VOC, you're going to be in a lot better shape doing it that way to actually use the data that you have on hand, whether it's just coming from anecdotal stuff from your sales force or you have some advisory boards or user group inputs already. Walk through some workshops where you're already looking at what customers are already telling you. And then I would suggest beginning the process of developing other Voice of the Customer mechanisms that will be more formal and feed into that actioning process. I found that in companies where they are doing the actioning from the get-go, and not waiting to see what the trend of data is before they start thinking about who should act on it, there are leaps and bounds ahead of their peers who are doing it the traditional way in maturity and value. So that's my biggest advice. What are your closing words of advice, Ingrid?
You know, I'm going to go back to keep it super simple in the beginning, identify where you need to find your data bits, and pull the people together who have the access and the accountability on them. Together, you can actually create a pretty strong voice, Lynn.
Excellent. Well, my closing advice is don't be afraid of comments. The gold is in the comments. They're so prescriptive. They're what will build empathy in your employees and executives. So allow people to read comments as much as possible. Embrace them. Roll them out in small amounts if needed, so that people can absorb as many of those customer comments as possible. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining our call today on Successful Voice of the Customer programs. We welcome your continued comments on our blogs or in our social media sites. So that's chiefcustomer.com and clearactioncx.com. And until next time, best wishes to you in optimizing customer experience.